Hi, this is Nicole Kupchick, and welcome to Recess 10. Today, I'm here with Dr. Bridget Joseph. She is the Program Director for Emergency Cardiovascular Care at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, Massachusetts. She also serves as the Director of Simulation Education for the Department of Nursing at the Carl J. Shapiro Simulation Skills Center. Hello, Dr. Joseph.
Hi, Nicole. How are you?
Great. I just want to say a huge congratulations to you for recently getting your doctorate.
Thank you so much. It was a big professional accomplishment, and I'm glad it's behind me.
I can only imagine. I'm really excited to chat with you today. You've just done so much amazing work at Beth Israel. What I wanted to chat about with you today is how you've been using data that you're able to collect during resuscitations and use it for simulation for future training. So can you chat with us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd love to. So that's one of the big things that we started implementing a few years ago. We use the CodeStat data from our defibrillators. And so we do use the LifePak 15s. And after every code event, we do pull that CodeStat data. And we look at those reports from everything that's happened in the arrest. We look at the rhythm. We look when we did our first defibrillation, when we started compressions. We use manual compressions, or if we use electronic compressions, we look at that and then we review it. We want to see if we're hitting the national standards for time to defibrillation for a VTAC, VFib, or if we're just delaying compressions for some reason. So we look at all of that. And most often in the resuscitation committee, we look at it and we've hit most of the national standards. But then we have internal standards that are just a little bit tighter that we want our staff to be doing things because we have everything at our fingertips and we have it. We have the innovations. We want them to use it and use it quickly.
Give me some examples of this. Like, where are your standards a little bit higher than national?
So we, despite the fact that for VTAC, VFib, you have up to 2 minutes to defibrillate, we have defibrillators everywhere. We have them everywhere. And the expectation is that our patients should be on them within basically 30 seconds of realizing they're under arrest. We shoot to have the first defibrillation in a minute.
So, but I think that's reasonable, especially, yeah, if you've got an environment.
Exactly. We have everything there, so why not use it? And sometimes totally understandable that we have a large campus. We have actually two different campuses and things are very spread out. So in the inpatient units, our defibrillators are like right there. So there's really, it's a lot easier to hit that mark. And we do train all staff. We train patient care technicians. We train basically everyone how to use our defibrillators, not just the regular AEDs that are in the wall, but we train everyone on LifePak 15s so that anyone from any level should know how to put on the hands-free combo pads and defibrillate right off the bat. So in some of the areas, like maybe a radiology area or MRI, the defibrillators aren't right at their fingertips, but they're very close. So those, I give them a little bit of a break and I say, okay, 2 minutes. But for the inpatient areas where the code carts are right there and the defibrillators are right there, we want them to hit it and we want them to hit it in about a minute. So I don't, it's not punitive if they don't get it in a minute, but it's something that I look for and it's some of the trends that we look for. And same with compressions. They should be starting manual compressions immediately.
So can you tell the listeners, how is it that you get the data?
We are lucky that we do have some resuscitation research assistants. So after every code blue event, which is what we call our cardiac and rest events at the hospital, we do have RAs that go to the defibrillators and they actually just, they physically download everything. So you can go and hook a computer up to the LifePaks and it will pull out all of the data from the event and it pulls it into CodeStat software and it gives us a beautiful reading of rhythms of hands-on time, hands-off time, and it will tell us the rates of our compressions and our compression fractions. It gives us all the data that we need to know how well we did during that resuscitation. If we hook up our end-tidal CO2, it gives us that reading and we know basically what's going on with our patient. It just gives us a good overview of what's happening. And I utilize it to really look in, see what was happening from a data standpoint. And then I always go back to the code team responders, because if there is a delay for some reason, a delay in starting compressions, or which I perceive, or again, a perceived delay in defibrillation, I want to go and I want to ask them, what was going on? Like, what happened? And there's usually always a backstory. They were in with the defibrillator, but you know, something happened. But I look for those trends and I look for those stories and I compare it to the data. And then I use that to actually create simulations, because those barriers, like, oh, we couldn't figure out how to get the head of the bed down, or the bed was too high, so we didn't start compressions. And, you know, I was kneeling. It took me a second to realize I should just kneel on the bed and start compressions until someone could get me a step stool. Those things are those barriers that happen in those split seconds during an emergency, when it's easy to Monday morning quarterback for me and be like, oh, well, why didn't you just do this or do that? But at the time, the staff are working as hard and as quickly as they can to save someone's life that has gone into cardiac arrest. So I take that data and I take those barriers, and I actually, in my other hat in the simulation center, we create those into simulation experiences. And so that it doesn't feel punitive, or that staff don't feel like we're pointing out any flaws, I take those as learning experiences every time. So I will create a simulation experience based upon that, and obviously de-identify the patient and make things a little bit different, but add in those barriers and challenges in a simulation experience. The step stool is not right there. They have to ask or look around for different items. And usually when you're in a simulation center, everything's there at your fingertips because you want to, you know, simulate it, but it's usually pretty easy. We actually create those barriers and those challenges to see how people work through it. Then we debrief it and we go back and we do it again.
What are some other common themes that you've identified by doing these post-event download reviews?
One of the big things that we were seeing for a while was that during compressions, when we were doing manual compressions, either compressions would get really poor, they wouldn't be as deep as they should, so they weren't getting the end tidal CO2 results, and it wasn't necessarily noticed by anyone on the team, or the hands-off time was a little bit longer than it should have been. And mostly it was because when I went and talked to staff, they got distracted. They got distracted because they knew that they should be focusing on compressions and doing compressions because that was their role. However, somebody would ask for help with something in the room, or finding something in the code cart, or they heard that somebody else was having trouble with something and they knew how to fix it. So then they just got distracted telling them, oh, it's in the third drawer in the code cart, or, oh, pull that lever and then the head of the bed will go down. And it distracted them. It pulled them away from what they should be focusing on because they were trying so hard to work as a team and to help out, which in reality, it's not a bad thing. It's a great thing that we work as a team and we want to help each other. But we used it as a way to help people to get focused. And that's actually something that we pulled into our sim center, is on some of our mannequins, we can check the depth and rate of compressions. And so we would have one of the simulation center staff go in there and just start asking kind of inane questions, but things that they should know how to do during the arrest, and start trying to distract people. Or even be a family member that didn't want to just sit there quietly, because we do have family presence during our arrest events. And so we would have them just try and distract in any way possible to reinforce with the people doing the compressions that that is your role. There's other people in the room that can focus on other things.
So how long have you been doing this?
For about 10 years.
Okay, so about 10 years. And then over that time, have you seen an improvement in performance?
Most definitely. We have seen such an improvement in time to defibrillation, time to starting compressions, and we have seen much improvement in our resuscitations overall.
And I know you probably can't directly tie that to survival, but over time, have you seen your survival rates go up?
We have. We do a lot of different things to impact our survival rates, but we most certainly have seen improvement in survival.
Well, I just want to thank you for joining me. I think anytime you can use data from resuscitations and give that feedback to the people who are doing the resuscitations and incorporate that into simulation can only be helpful. Well, the newly appointed Dr. Bridget Joseph, I would like to thank you for joining me today. So I'm Nicole Kupchick, this is Rhesus 10, and we're clear.